the Roratoria itself, this radio play, we call it radio play, mm-hmm. has had a long, the much work in it and the long processes, really extraordinary processes. Mm. Perhaps we start to speak a bit about these processes. Okay, we spoke about your writings for Finnegan's Wake. This was the text.
Right, right.
And you said then...
Then you suggested that I make some music to go with it, and I agreed.
Yes.
And then the question was, what music would I make?
That's it.
I decided to use the text which I'd written and which could be identified by page and line in terms of the Viking edition of Finnegan's Wake. I decided to use that as a ruler or as the measure of the music that would be made. I wanted to make a music that was free of melody and free of harmony and free of counterpoint and free of musical theory. I wanted it not to be music in the sense of music, but I wanted it to be music in the sense of Finnegan's Wake.
Hmm? And that's music.
But not a theory about music. I wanted it to turn the book, or I wanted the music to turn itself toward Finnegan's Wake and away from music itself. So I used this text as a ruler with its lines and pages. Then I could list the sounds in Finnegan's Wake and identify them according to page and line, and then I could put them on the tape in the hour where they, at the moment where they belong.
That's to say that...
So each sound has been put in one at a time at the point in relation to the whole book that it bears in relation to the text which I'm reading. Do you see?
Yes. There are two rulers, the Finnegan's Wake original and then the your voice, your reading.
That's right, the page and line.
Yes, the edition gives the point where the sound comes in.
Then the places that are mentioned in the Wake are identified in Louis Mink's book, The Gazetteer of Finnegan's Wake, are identified by page and line. And so a sound coming from Nagasaki or from Canberra in Australia or from a town in Ireland or a street in Dublin could be identified by page and line and then put into this hour where it belonged in relation to the page and line of, of Finnegan's Wake. It's an interesting thing to do, and I'm going to write the score for this so that someone else could either make a different realization than the one I've made with John Fulleman of Finnegan's Wake. He could make another realization of Finnegan's Wake, or he could do the same kind of thing with another book. For instance, Homer's Iliad could be turned into a piece of music.
Like a model.
That's what I'd like.
Yes.
It's a fascinating thing and suggests, at least, if not a new field of music, at least a new field of activity for people who were interested in sounds.
That's it. It was the first voyage to Ireland.
First voyage for all three of us.
Yeah.
And we spent a week recording the sounds in Dublin at places mentioned in Finnegan's Wake.
But how do you choose them? It's not so easy to take...
Well, all these places were listed in Louis Mink's book called Finnegan's Wake Gazetteer. There were so many places listed that in order to reduce the number, I arbitrarily chose the number that there were pages in Finnegan's Wake, 626. And I obtained those through chance operations, the I Ching chance operations, so that I brought the list down to 626 places, about half of which were in Ireland, and then half of those were in Dublin. The other half were scattered around the country.
We don't hear all sounds clearly, I make in the form of an identification. Our listeners will not miss them because they don't have heard them before as you. When they're not in, what will be happening?
I'm sure
for
it
this,
makes some kind of difference.
Yeah.
When I discussed this project with Franz von Rossum, he had the impression that because of the number of sounds that the result might be white noise. But I said, no, Franz, I think if it's going to be noise, it will be not white, but black, some other color than white. It won't be a hiss like that from a generator, but it'll be something that comes from all of these sounds coming together.
We spoke about your trip to Ireland, the many sounds, and but you mentioned that in Roratorio, we have some other hundreds, nearly thousand other sounds coming from all over the world, let me see. How do you get them? What was the idea?
Well, first I asked you if you could get the radios, and not just WDR, but other radios too, to cooperate, and you said you would do that, and you did. And then in the United States, I tried to get the various sounds from South America and from the United States itself.
And there are some private persons too, some friends of you.
That's
David,
true.
David Tudor, and some other
and other composers.
Yeah, let me say, they had not an advice by you to give you this or this sound. You gave them some liberty to be in this project. They are producers in a certain way, aren't they?
Right.
Your reading, I think we must broadcast it separately because it's real marvelous. But when you put it in now, or let me say you took it at the ruler of the Hörspiel Roratorio, and we will hear it, that this voice is sometimes nearly out. Even English people couldn't understand the semantical sense, or even the tone. It is in a certain way destroyed.
This is our experience in life every day. Wherever we are, a large amount of what we have to experience is being destroyed. If, for instance, you're looking across the street and a car passes between you and what you're looking at, or if you go to a museum where you would think that you would have greater peace and quiet, as you're looking at the Mona Lisa, someone passes in front of you or bumps into you from behind.
Oh, this is a kind of, I think Joyce has written it too, of sound sense.
Yes.
It is the question to the sense is perhaps the answer, sound sense.
About a week ago here in Paris, one of the issues of the Herald Tribune, I was told, had an article about Finnegan's Wake and Joyce's thought. I didn't see this article, but I'm told that Joyce said that he didn't mean Finnegan's Wake to be understood. He meant it as a kind of piece of music.
Poetry, music, I can't spell it, it's the name of
meant it
poetry
as music.
Music,
and as you were saying earlier, he might have been a musician.
Yes.
Fortunately, he wasn't.
Yes.
Left room for me to be a musician.
No, like the brother of Shaman Chen. Perhaps, John, about John David Fulman, who was with you all the time.
We worked very, very closely. I sat at a table beside the console where he was, and I would put the 16-track machine in place, as I saw it, for receiving a sound that would pass over the point in the book, of course, where it belonged.
Yes.
All that was done through chance operations. And I was doing it at first by hand, but fortunately here in IRCOM, the whole thing was able to be programmed.
Yeah.
And shortly we had a list of all those instructions. Yeah. Another composer, whom I don't know, who was here a year or so before, had already put in the program of the I Ching into IRCOM.
Yeah. John, we come to I Ching. You can speak very, very long about it, but I think our audience don't know
what it is. Well, I'm able, instead of making choices, I'm able to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And then the questions are answered by I Ching chance operations. I ask, for instance, of these 3,000 places listed in this book, which 626 am I to use?
And you get the answer.
I get the answer through 626 steps.
Yeah.
I'm able to count all the places, relate them to the number 64. I then get 64 groups of whatever. And then I'm able to locate a group and then a member of a group, and I know exactly what I'm to do.
Yeah.
In the same way, we're able to answer any question.
Yeah. That's to say, Roratorio is composed by this chance operations. All questions you had were answered by
decisions involving taste or intelligence.
Yeah.
The reason I do that is that I have a faith, as I think Joyce did, that if everybody comes, it'll be perfectly all right.
Yeah. And everybody must have the chance to come.
Furthermore, he seems to indicate in his statement, "Here comes everybody," that whether we want them to come or not, they're coming.
Yeah. You said Roratorio, and then the undertitle was
On Finnegan's Wake, Irish Circus.
Irish Circus
on Finnegan's
Wake.
Yes.
And that's an interesting word, circus. It has some certain sense in your work, in your compositions. What's
it means,
the circus for
it
you?
It means that there's not one center,
but
that that life itself is a plurality of centers.
Hmm? Yeah.
This is a Buddhist idea.
And this is realized in Roratorio very tense. That
right.
is a circus in which each sound has its certain liberty, its chance.
I did one thing to simplify the work, and I'm afraid that this is what happens in all human projects.
Yeah.
That we do something to simplify our work or to make our work practical, and that we thereby diminish the complexity which is characteristic of life itself.
Yeah.
Through our work, we simplify life somehow. I would like not to do that, but I did it.
Perhaps, John, we can at this point we can give a little example for the audience how you make the montage.
The first part, which is longer, the second part is 28 minutes, and the first part is 32 minutes. First part has only three
multi-track.
And the third one is quite thin.
Yeah.
But the other one has four. So that it's denser. As the piece continues, it gets more and more thick. And just now we noticed that as it got thicker, our enthusiasm increased. So it's conceivable that we could have a situation like this that was even thicker than this is.
Hmm? Yes.
So that that reminds me of the story of the, I don't know if it's too relevant, but there was a Jewish man who lived in New York who was disturbed because some relatives had come to live with him, and he had very little room, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd not only come by themselves, but they'd brought a dog with them.
Yeah.
And then something else happened, some other people arrived, and gradually it got like the Marx Brothers. It was thicker and thicker, you know. And so he finally went to the rabbi, and he explained the situation. And the rabbi's advice was that he should get a cat and some birds.
It's really amazing, the story.
And then when it got worse, you see, thicker, then the next thing the rabbi did was to take the things away one by one until it came back to the original situation, which had seemed to be too thick.
A good example for oratorio, you know. But about this sickness, I have...
So that if you think the first part is too thick, wait till you hear the second, it's thicker.
John, in this sense, I remember the last words of Writing Through Finnegan's Way and the last words of Roratorio.
Yes.
And you know it better than me.
Yes, just a whisk of pity, a cloud in peace and silence. That spells the name of Joyce. Just is the J of Joyce. Just a whisk of, O is the O of Joyce. Of pity, the Y of Joyce. A cloud, the C of Joyce. In peace, the E. And silence.
And silence.
That's the end of the second writing through Finnegan's Wake. Also the first writing.
And this word silence has a certain sense in your work.
Silence is not the absence of sound, but is the fact of having changed one's mind to be interested in the sounds that there are, to hear them.
Even when they are so thick, then?
Yes, silence can often be very loud.